back to Carlney Transportation and Finance Policy Division to order. We don't have a quorum at this point, so we won't be able to do any moving the minutes, Representative Morrow.
I'm ready, though.
Good. Today we're going to have an overview of the Department of Transportation budget, and I believe Mr. Gray, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Leader. My name is Kevin Gray, Chief Financial Officer for MnDOT, and I'm going to talk to you initially a little bit about the process for going through our budget over today's committee hearing and into Thursday, snow and storm willing, for the completion of the budget. What I thought we would do today, Mr. Chair, is go through a general overview of the budget, beginning with the Lieutenant Governor.
Well, thank you. We have not a visitor, but it's nice to have you, Lieutenant Governor. Oh, no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I wish you'd be here.
No.
So welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate being back. And I will tell you, Mr. Chair, you and I spend a lot of times in the same room together. And I will tell you from my old legislative times, some of those were the most fun times I had. And I appreciate it, the way we work together in a very nonpartisan way and bipartisan way on transportation infrastructure for the state. And having said that, that's kind of what this budget is. It's truly a budget proposal for the state of Minnesota to move us forward. And I'd like to do that presentation, and then Kevin will give more detail. And I just have our new deputy commissioner, who I'd like to introduce towards the end of my comments, if I might.
Okay, fine.
Okay. Well, again, I have to tell you I'm excited about being back in this committee room. It's nice to see all of you. And we're going to be talking about the 2008-2009 budget recommendations. And it includes investments in transportation improvements, maintenance, safety operations, totaling more than $4.2 billion. This is a 4% increase over the amount the legislature approved for the 2006-2007 budget. The source of these funds, for some of you, those of you who are new, are state motor fuel taxes, vehicle registration fees, motor vehicle sales taxes, general fund dollars, and federal transportation funds. The budget was developed under a bottom-up philosophy, incorporating the best professional input of transportation managers throughout the agency. All of our folks had input in this. As a matter of fact, many of our district engineers were here for the Senate hearing, and some are here with us today if you have comments or questions for them later. The process resulted in a budget that addressed state priorities of maintenance and preservation of our existing infrastructure, making safety improvements, investing in projects that improve mobility and reduce congestion, and continually improving MnDOT's service and efficiency. This budget also incorporates the most recent Valenti Molnow transportation finance proposal, which has five main elements. The first one, is a one-time $100 million general fund appropriation to supplement the statewide funding for the next two road construction seasons. The second part is dedicating the sales tax revenue from leased vehicles to transportation by including those revenues in the base of the constitutionality dedicated motor vehicle excise taxes. This proposal will provide approximately $65 million for state highways, local roads, and transit for the biennium. Exempting certain trunk highway expenditures from paying state sales taxes, which will save the trunk highway fund approximately $4 million per year. And that was one, I think, Chairman Leader, that you and I remember way back when we tried to make sure that we weren't taking funds, constitutionally dedicated funds, and moving them to the general fund. Charging a sales tax pretty much does that. The fourth proposal is for a public-private demonstration project to promote and study mileage-based transportation user fees as a replacement to the current gas tax-based funding system we have today. And the last is a $1.7 billion 10-year bonding program to leverage new MBEST revenues and accelerate more than 25 high-priority state highway projects years ahead of their original schedules. Bonding was a dedicated revenue stream for debt retirement is a proven effective strategy for leveraging resources to return results to the citizens of the state. The bond excelled projects that we advanced through the 2003 Plenty-Molnow Transportation Funding Package almost doubled our construction program and delivered safety and congestion benefits to the citizens years ahead of what was expected. These and other efforts have helped Minnesota post the lowest number of traffic fatalities since World War II on Minnesota highways. That's a significant achievement with a lot of help from a lot of folks. They've also helped us reduce congestion in the Twin Cities 3 years in a row. Bonding investments have also helped improve the condition of the state and local bridges across the state, have supported one of the most vibrant rural transit systems in the country, and help provide the Twin Cities with the most bus-only shoulders of any other metropolitan area. Overall, this budget reflects this administration's transportation priorities to be good stewards of the system, improving safety, advance long-delayed priority projects, and be as efficient and effective with tax dollars as possible. As I said, Kevin Gray will present more details on the finite of the budget shortly. But I'd like to let you know, with the new session, we also brought some new leadership to MnDOT. Not really new, just new position for that leadership. So I'm pleased to announce that Lisa Fries is our deputy commissioner, and she's here with us today. And Lisa brings with her 23 years of government planning expertise to this position. In her previous position as the Southwest Area Manager for MnDOT, Metro's division, Lisa was responsible for coordinating MnDOT's plans and project activities for an area that included Carver, Scott, and Dakota counties. With her proven leadership, I know all the challenges we face will be enhanced by her expertise. And with that, I'd like to have Lisa just introduce herself and maybe say a few words, if she might, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. May I ask a question? How do you spell her name? I think I have it correctly, but perhaps...
Please.
F-R-E-Y?
F-R-E-E-S-E.
Oh, please. Okay, I'm sorry. And thank you, Commissioner. If I could just a moment before we do, we can officially call the meeting to order. We have a quorum, and Representative Morrow moves the minutes. I think everybody's read them. Any questions or not? If all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. The minutes are approved. Welcome to the committee. Your title, I believe, now is Assistant Commissioner. Is that correct?
Deputy Commissioner.
Deputy Commissioner, okay.
Thank you, Chair Leader and members of the committee. I am Lisa Fries, as the Lieutenant Governor introduced me. And I just want to let you know that I'm very happy to be here in this capacity for the department. I'm looking forward to building on the quality programs at the department and the innovations that our staff are known for and continue to deliver every day of the year. I expect in my role to be an integral part of the development of our 2009 statewide transportation plan. And I look forward to working with all of you in a little bit different capacity. I see a few familiar faces around the room that I worked with in my previous capacities. I also look forward to working with your local units of government and the industry as well. I want you to feel free to call me at any time if you have questions, and I appreciate this opportunity to be introduced to all of you.
Thank you.
And with that, Mr. Chair, if we could have Kevin continue on with the budget book.
Commissioner Mola, I don't know if that before or not, but I should ask if any member has questions,
sure.
If that's... Representative Holbert.
Well, Mr. Chair, not a question, but I think Representative Hornstein would concur. Ms. Freeze was very helpful in our 35W busway study and program, and I think we got a really good result for a limited amount of dollars, and she was very easy to work with, and I would recommend any committee members that have any concerns to feel free to contact her.
Thank you. I would completely concur. I was thinking the same thing.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was thinking the same thing as Ms. Fries was introduced. So very, very helpful on that project and I think in general. So thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's nice to have someone who, as your deputy commissioner, who's been out in the field working day-to-day with folks and helping them understand the process, but also looking for solutions. And that's really what Lisa's done. And that's why I see her as a real asset to MnDOT in that position.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, since you left, you can realize this is more unwieldy than when we were in charge, not when you were in charge. That's why we could get things done. No, it's tough. But if there aren't any questions from the Commissioner, we'll proceed. And all of you members do have, thank you, Commissioner, have your budget book in your packet. And again, welcome to the committee, Mr. Gray.
Thank you, Chair Leader and members of the committee. I'm just going to give you a quick overview of what we hope to accomplish today and on Thursday, kind of give you the process perspective. As Chair Leader noted, you should all have a handout for reference. It's also a visual on the screen above. The game plan that we're looking at with the permission of the committee is to go through a number crunching perspective of the budget. The Lieutenant Governor has highlighted the Governor's proposed recommendations. I'm going to translate that into more of the finance perspective, if you will. And then we're going to take advantage of the budget books to have each of the program area directors come up and talk about their specific programs, whether it's in the state roads side or multimodal or some of the other program areas, state aid that we have. Today we'd like to get through the overview and also talk very specifically about one of the state roads programs, and we'll get to that in a minute if time permits. We'll add some. We've got people here and resources here to cover as much as time and committee interest permits. Let's see here. Just so like some quick background going into the overview, I wanted to reemphasize the important role that the strategic plan has in helping us form our budget processes and decisions and our commitment to operate, maintain, and preserve what we have. That's a very critical assumption as we went into our budget process. Not unlike any private sector business or other public agency, the challenge in our budget is to match what you have with your current priorities and principles. And for us, we've got the higher calling of delivering the program to create the greatest value for Minnesota taxpayers, and that's the intent and point of the of our budget process. And we did work very aggressively to identify priorities and outcomes from kind of a bottoms-up perspective, as the Lieutenant Governor referenced in her opening comments. Just to give you some background as to the budget itself, we're essentially organized into four broad programs, starting at the front of the book, which we'll get to in a bit, multimodal systems. That includes aeronautics, transit, and freight. The appropriation authority related to those approximately $500 billion. The total MnDOT budget, as you can see on the bottom, is $4.2 billion. So I'm trying to give you a sense of perspective and scale here. Our largest program is our state roads program. That consists of three significant programs. Our infrastructure investment and planning, and we're going to, again, hear more about these programs from other testifiers throughout the process. But very quickly, infrastructure investment and planning is two basic components. One is it's our state road construction program, the capital program, if you will. And then the other piece of that is all that it takes to plan, design, help build, and do the contract administration of that program. So it's the personnel and other costs related to getting a project from the front end to completion. The other significant program in state roads is our operations and maintenance. And as I referenced earlier, this is the program area that, at a minimum, we would like to cover today. Finally, we have electronic communications as a subset of a program within state roads. Of course, local roads is a very significant piece of the funding that goes through MnDOT's, through the transportation budget. Approximately $1.3 billion of the $4.3 billion is related to county and municipal road systems. And then finally, we have a modest portion for our general support, our administrative, and some of our building management costs.
Mr. Gray, excuse me.
Yes.
In the process of your review, are you going to relate comparatively what it was past to what it is now somewhere in your process?
Mr. Chair, yes. And just real quickly, I think the proposed spending is up approximately 4% from the prior biennium. And I'll verify that number, but I think we're in the 3.9 range, 3.94 billion of the prior biennium, the 4.2 billion. And each area we'll go through and talk about some of those changes.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Real quickly, to give you some perspective on where we get our revenue sources, as the Lieutenant Governor noted, our biggest contributor remains the motor fuel taxes, salmon-colored number there, 31%. That's approximately $650 million a year. Then looking at registration fees or tab fees, that number is approximately, it's $960 million for the biennium. So it's a significant number. Interestingly enough, speaking of a little bit of comparison, tab fees were approaching and even exceeding about in 2002 the level of motor fuel taxes. So with the Ventura administration, of course, there was the change in the tab fee rate and things. So it's a little bit lesser number now, but it's still very significant to us. And I'm going to apologize to the committee in advance with the change in some of the MVS and things like this. I think we've got a couple of percentages wrong here, but the still shape of the pie is the same, and I'll send out a revised chart. But our MVS numbers are about $465 million, or closer to about 9% of the revenues that come into the state. So that's a change that I will get to the committee, but I wanted to highlight that.
Yes, Mr. Gray, these numbers that you're giving are projected in the budget. That's correct. That's not existing.
They are projected for 8 and 9, and they're based on the November forecast. Of course, these numbers, I'm advised by finance, will change tomorrow, whether significantly or not. I haven't heard a big change of anything, but tomorrow's the February forecast, so I think there'll be, particularly with invest in any of these categories, there may be some modest adjustments. Shared federal taxes is essentially two things. One is it's the funding we get from the FHWA for our state road construction program. That is indeed approximately about $700 million. Over and above that, there's another, $450 million that goes towards airport grants, transit grants, and to our local roads. So that number is really closer to $1.2 billion, and again, we'll change the, I'll get you an updated slide, but I wanted to give you more of a perspective on where we get our revenues. Again, the three main state revenue sources, and to acknowledge that the federal number is a big number. Some of the highlights of this budget and some of the financial impacts or the actual appropriation impacts are to follow. But first I wanted to make kind of a process note here in that the MVEST amendment passage technically isn't a budget request, but it's a fundamental, important piece of some of the decisions we're making about how much and how we're going to spend and invest our resources. And so just the November forecast indicated that the impacts and the phase-in of the investment is about $111 million for the biennium. And that is split between the trunk highway fund, $56 million, counties and municipalities received $39 million, and the phased-in portion of Greater Minnesota Transit is $16 million. For purposes of the budget, too, I wanted to reinforce that we're using the 60-40 split as a part of this, and within the 40% for transit, 38% is Metropolitan Transit, and 2% is Greater Minnesota Transit. All the numbers in this presentation relate to Greater Minnesota Transit only. They do not address any dollars or impacts of the MBES passage to Metropolitan Transit. The sales tax on leased vehicles is a governor's recommendation that adds another approximately $42 million to our highway user fund, and separately some dollars to, of course, Greater Minnesota Transit as well. And that is a governor's recommendation.
Excuse me, Mr. Gray, Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gray, I just had a question about the MBES amendment passage and phase-in. Is that $111 million figure a biennial figure or an annual figure?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, all of these numbers will be biennial figures.
Thank you.
With respect, again...
Excuse me again. Sorry, Mr. Gray. Representative Morgan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And in the same vein, is that $111 million, is that the total MBES money, or is that new MBES money as a result of passage of the amendment?
Mr. Gray?
Mr. Chair and members, that's the incremental portion that's over and above what we would have received in our base budget. So it presumes a base budget amount, and this is the phase-in over and above that.
Thank you.
So it would be new revenues, essentially, to transportation. And again, that was just to give some perspective and scale to the committee so that you had that background. That was a good question. I appreciate that. Again, on the sales tax and leased vehicles, the governor's recommendation, that does bring in additional monies to our highway user fund, and that is reflected in our projections and uses. As the lieutenant governor noted, a significant point of recommendation from the governor is the general fund infusion of $100 million. A vast majority, $95 million of that, is intended for increased construction activity and particularly to also ensure that we are able to keep the triangle, as told, maybe I shouldn't call it the devil's triangle, but the triangle project on track, and that would is a $40 to $45 million funding requirement, and that's part and parcel of that $95 million. We'll be looking at other project statewide as a potential for that. It also includes the mileage-based tax study that the Lieutenant Governor briefly referenced in her remarks.
Excuse me. Representative Hornstein had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Reid. So on the comment you made on the triangle project, when one of your staff members was here several weeks ago, he had mentioned that the crosstown was really it for the year. I mean, that was the one project that you had money for. Are you saying now that there will be other projects? And did I hear that correctly when he testified earlier that the crosstown was pretty much it?
Mr. Gray.
Or the metro.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, yes, there's a commitment and intent to, if this bill is passed, with this infusion, in that we will be able to get the triangle project on schedule for letting, I believe, this summer. Our district engineer from the metro is here and can talk to that in a little bit, perhaps, but I believe that's a letting for this summer. Okay. Yes. So the answer is yes.
Mr. Gray, do you want questions now or should we wait? Because we've got them popping up all over, I'm afraid. And maybe you aren't the person that's going to ask or answer them, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I think I'll be able to take a lot of the questions. We do have, in addition to our district engineers, we have our program and office directors here, and a number of them will be testifying, if not today, on Thursday. So they're a great resource, and if I'm struggling with some of the of the issues, particularly for engineering or operational, then I will turn to them. But I'm fine with the kind of pecking away, understanding that slows it down a little bit.
There's a lot of eager faces out there. I see them. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gray, I'm trying to understand the page 5, the agency overview of the actual budget book. I just it has a $148 million reduction in the trunk highway fund. And then going to page 7, where it's broken down the change summary, I see the $100,985,000, essentially $101 million allocation in 2008. But I see one-time appropriations listed as a technical adjustment of a decrease of $129 million for 08 and again $129 million for 09. Can you just share with the committee what those technical adjustments and those one-time appropriations are and what the story is here?
Representative Kalin, if I may, I see you're in the whole budget book, and are you aware that he's...
This question's been sort of stewing with me for a while, and about what the $100 million is compared to the $259 million that's being taken out as a technical adjustment. That's the essence of it. So if you could sort of justify or set me straight, please.
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll be the first to admit these budget books are a lot to wade through, and they're confusing to me, even with my background. So I appreciate the questions. These technical adjustments, one of the things that we do across the board, all agencies, is we always revert back to our base budget for the next biennium. In other words, we have base funding that extends into the next biennium. A number of these adjustments are to accomplish that. Specifically with respect to the $129 million and the other figures that you referenced, that represents the fact that we raised our appropriation along with the BAP program, the Bond Advance Program, and the Advanced Construction Financing for the 2004-05 biennium. So, for the 2006-07 biennium, excuse me. And this is to get us back down, if you will, to our base adjustment. Or to our base funding level, if you will.
Do you have some tailing? Do you have it?
I've got that for now. I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
As Lieutenant Governor noted, we've had experienced just significant unprecedented levels of construction the past 3-4 years. That's been directly attributable to the bonding approved by the legislature, as well as the federal financing that we've used to leverage to bring more construction forward. And that's essentially the impacts of that those are infusions that end, if you will, they were for 2004 through 2007. So that technical adjustment reflects that we're not getting that level of funding or financing coming through. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in our construction section, too, so these are really fair questions. The sales tax exemption for trunk highway purchases is pretty straightforward. Approaching $9 million for the biennium. A little bit of a twist, of course, is that's not a new revenue source. That's just cost that we no longer have to, we're proposing we no longer have to incur. The armor operating costs, I made the mistake of not writing down what the acronym is, but this is essentially our emergency communication system. And this $2.3 million shift is a cost that we absorbed as an agency to support the metro backbone of this emergency communication system. Formally references 800 megahertz, but I'm told that's not the appropriate technology reference at all. But it's essentially the emergency communication system. We're proposing that, as is being planned for the expansion to the Rochester and St. Cloud areas of our emergency communication system, state emergency communication system, that the operating cost be part of the 911 fund. So that's, again, a cost that we don't have to absorb, and that's the reason it's there. The Lieutenant Governor noted the Governor's 10-year trunk highway bond program. The budget element to this is the debt service of $12.4 million, and that presumes, I believe, $100 million in bonds in 08 and 150 in 09, and that will be in our budget book, and we'll talk to that a little bit. But this would be the debt service on issuing those bonds and beginning to roll out those projects and make those investments.
Mr. Gray, when you expect that if that were passed, that they sell some of those bonds this year, because that's kind of a low, 12.4 is low, isn't it? What would be your high debt service normally?
Chair Leader, this is the 12.4 is related only to if the governor's proposal is adopted, a recognition that we will not have the projects ready initially right out of the chute, that we will have a more modest entry and then an aggressive ramp up in the program over the 10 years. We'll be clipping along at $250 million a year the last 4 years of the program. But initially, it's a little slower startup, and it's one thing to authorize the bonds, but in a technical sense, you don't need the cash even the day that you authorize them. So the Department of Finance has certain dates where they look ahead to our cash needs, and then they sell only as much as they need to, so we don't incur more debt service than necessary. So the $12.4 million is a pretty modest amount, but it's reflecting that we'll get out of the chute a little bit slower in terms of actual costs being incurred, and that will ramp up over time.
Basically, as I recall when you spoke, you're probably talking about $100 million more in new construction for this year. Would that be correct?
Mr. Chair, I think it'll probably be more than that. I think that we're looking to authorize bonds in the range of $250 million for the biennium. But I don't think that we'll approach anywhere near $250 million of actual construction costs. So $100 million might be a fair figure. And this would reflect selling some bonds throughout the year. In fact, I would say about $11 million of that amount is for 2009. So it's reflecting that we're going to not get as much work done initially, and then the cash needs and the projects will really start rolling. In addition, as part of our budget recommendations, we're proposing to move some money from our state road construction program to operations and maintenance. As part of our budget process, we spent a lot of time looking at performance targets and areas of needs on our maintenance side, and we tend to get a little more visibility, a little more focus, externally and on projects and the programs. But the reality is that we've been feeling pressures and have made assessments that we need to invest and infuse some more money into our operations and maintenance arena, and this is a reflection of that transfer. So that would be $13 million a year from construction to operations.
Mr. Gray,
mm-hmm.
Is that reflective of a previous transfer that you're transferring it back?
Mr. Chair, no. This is a new transfer. In fact, we're going to talk a little bit about what the purpose and the amounts are and how it's going to be used. That's the last slide of my presentation. It's kind of the segue to our discussion of the state roads operations and maintenance program of the budget. So when we get to that point, we can talk a little bit more about it. But this is a increased level of spending in our maintenance arena, and it's not inconsistent with the transfer that actually we made in the prior biennium for about $9 million or $18 million in the biennium. So it's a growing recognition of the pressures and needs in order for us to maintain our performance targets around smooth roads and clear roads and things of that nature, that we're recommending that transfer be approved. So it's additional new monies to maintenance and operations this biennium. We talked briefly just a minute ago about these technical adjustments, the construction program impacts. 2004 through 7, we aggressively used advanced construction financing, federal borrowing, to bring projects forward. As that proceeds, there are times where you have to pay that back and you have to catch your breath. Fiscal 08 is a time slot for us to catch our breath on the level federal financing that we can sustain. So we're proposing, while our base budget for the biennium remains the same and the total investment remains the same, with the exception, of course, the above, the transfer right in the point above, we're going to be down $77 million in state road construction spending in 2008, which is reflective of the payback for federal funding. And then we're going to increase that by the same amount in 2009 so that we can sustain for the biennium our level of investment in the state road construction program. But 2008 is that cliff that people have talked about for some time, and this is just a kind of a practical recognition of that. In addition, the governor has recommended for all agencies a compensation adjustment to recognize the rising pressures of personnel costs and their impacts on state agency budgets. And that number is $18.5 million for the biennium. That is actually $6 million in the first year and $12.5 million in the second year. And I point that out because $12.5 million is the base adjustment to MnDOT's operating budgets, and this is a personnel cost, increased investment in personnel.
Mr. Gray, may I ask you a question? On that one, my understanding, we're having some problems where salaries are bumping up to the top and you're losing a lot of your personnel because you can't pay comparable salaries because of the statute that we have in Minnesota. Is that a problem with your department?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that for all agencies, there are issues right now around competitiveness, and it may be certain positions, it may be certain types of work that's being performed. With respect to your question about this ceiling, there are approximately 8 to 10 MnDOT personnel who do bump up against this statutory constraint of the governor's salary not paying. I think commissioners are capped at 90% of the governor's salary, and I don't presume to understand that number other than the legislature's arrived at it. It's been in place for some time, but there's some limited impact there. I think the broader issue for state agencies is going to be market competitiveness as resources and individuals that we look for to do our work. As the workforce dwindles and we kind of have the demographics changing where there are more people leaving the workforce than coming in, and as the agency becomes more and more specialized in certain areas, I think we're going to have to face that dynamic of a whole host of things, of which compensation may and likely will be a piece of that. But with respect to the upper end, there's approximately 8 to 10 people who have an artificial cap that's linked to the governor's 90% of the governor's salary currently.
Mr. Gray, is that basically in the central office, or is that also out in the field?
Mr. Chair, that is in the field as well, at least one or maybe two positions in the field, one for sure.
Yeah, thank you. There aren't any recommendations as far as the governor's office suggesting any recommendations to do something about that or not?
Mr. Chair, not that I'm aware of, no.
Thank you.
Lastly, I wanted to also point out a significant investment is additional funding for capital improvement projects. Many of you probably recall that in 2003, one of the sources of helping the state through its fiscal challenge was to take advantage of a fund balance that had accumulated in our state airports fund. And there are a number of reasons why that fund balance was there. But at the time, the priority was considered to borrow $15 million from the State Airports Fund. And that money was a four-year borrowing and is now, as of July 1st, will be returned to the State Airports Fund. We're proposing to invest that money in additional capital improvement projects over and above our base funding for those projects. So this is a one-time infusion of $12 million towards additional airport capital improvement projects.
Mr. Gray, Representative Beard, have a question.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gray, yeah, that $15 million, I think Representative Leader and I were on that right out of the chute, make sure they came back. In reading the notebook here that Representative Kalin was in a little bit ago, and, of course, the three big binders we got, from the governor's office. Thank you for doing that, by the way. I can find the $12 million referred to several times, but I can't find the $15 million anywhere. And I know that it's in state law that on July 1st, $15 million comes back. And I just want to hear, since I haven't seen it with my own eyes, I want to hear the assurances that all $15 million is coming back to the airport fund, and that the $12 million we're seeing here is just a request to spend the part of the $15 million that's coming back.
Mr. Gray?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that that's an automatic, that's a done deal. Yes, you've got that assurance, and more significantly, you'll see that we're proposing $6 million of additional projects in 08 and $6 million in 09 that are the $12 million. It allows the fund to have that capacity to incur that additional spending. But I will point out it's not a base adjustment. It basically increased the fund balance by this $15 million. So.
Thank you. Representative Beard?
Yeah. And we're going to get into the program and the budget book a little bit more as we go along here. But I'm going to, at the risk of complicating things, even for myself a little bit, I'm going to talk to you from a kind of an accountant's perspective, if you'll bear with me in that regard. As we looked at, and this committee has expressed a great deal of interest in the fund balance and the fiscal status of the Trunk Highway Fund, and that is the biggest fund that we deal with in our budget. We thought it'd be good to look at a number of items that actually add or increase the fund balance, and then some things that tend to take away from it. And then we'll revisit the chart that you saw, I believe it was Mr. Peterson that presented, that showed some of the fund balance impacts, and that indeed we had some even deficit spending or deficit fund balances that we intended to correct. That said, some one-time monies, just to kind of tick off these change items that are part of the governor's recommendation, we are proposing that the Transportation Revolving Loan Fund, the TRLF fund, that some monies that are in there that are dedicated to trunk highway purposes and are trunk highway funds only, rather than go to the Transportation Revolving Loan Fund and borrow that and then put it back, kind of paying and borrowing from ourselves, we thought we'll just put that in. We intend that we're fully supportive of the Transportation Revolving Loan Fund, but we're funded with state general fund monies and federal monies that can be leveraged by the projects and the proposers of those projects. That will all stay intact, but we didn't gain that same leverage capacity, and it seemed like a kind of a paperwork exercise to take $4 million out of the Trunk Highway Fund at a point in time, put it in there, and then borrow it back to ourselves, essentially. So this is just saying that the Trunk Highway portion of the Transportation Revolving Loan Fund is return that back to the Trunk Highway Fund.
Mr. Gray, is there anything left? I think there's another bill in to put more money in, or not bill, but basically, I think in a budget that replaces some of that. So this is basically a little bit of reserve you have now. Isn't there another $20 million or something in one of the proposals?
Mr. Chair, there's a couple things going on, and I'll try and be as crisp as possible about this. The TRLF is funded by three or four sources of funds, and we have to keep them in silos. One of those sources was we put some trunk highway monies in 5, 6, 7 years ago. And in addition, we put in an even greater amount in the range of $15 to $20 million, I believe, of other the federal monies and state general funds. The other monies are in transit or other highway projects that can be leveraged. In other words, they can borrow against it and then bond over and above that and kind of increase the purchasing power of those monies, the leveraging standpoint. All that money is staying intact. The one silo, because of the constitutional nature of trunk highway monies, is that we can only use it on trunk highway projects. Well, we might as well do that out of the Trunk Highway Fund. So this is the portion of the Trunk Highway Fund dollars that are sitting in the TRLF that aren't being used currently. And we thought we'd just bring them back home and program them with our regular dollars in the Trunk Highway Fund.
Representative Hornstein had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Gray, on this bonding silo that you just described, is the... On the things that decrease fund balance, you have the $12 million and debt service. Is that the total amount of debt service for all of the bonding in this year's budget, or what would be over the life of the bonds, the amount of debt service for the new bonds the tenders in this year's biennial budget?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hornstein, a couple of things.
A promotion.
Excuse me. Not really.
I got demoted.
You talked to us about this promotion, right?
That's a senatorial question.
A couple of things. First of all, we have approximately $600 million of bonds outstanding. We haven't sold quite all of them, but very close to that amount. $600 million plus has been authorized already. That's part of our base budget, and that's an open appropriation that is indeed already factored in there. I believe that we're in the range of $50 million of debt service associated with that. The $12.4 million is new because we're asking for new authorization with the governor's $1.7 billion bonding program and proposal. And the $12.4 is merely for the first 2 years of that. If those bonds are authorized and issued over the time frame of the 10 years as planned, and we're able to deliver and accelerate those 25-plus projects and capitalize on those cost savings and bring the projects to the public sooner, the total debt service on the $1.7 billion would be approximately $2.6 billion in that range. A good rule of thumb on average in our present interest rate climate is it costs about 1.5 times in terms of total debt service payments relative to the principal amount of bonds authorized. So the 2.6 sounds about right relative to a $1.7 billion bonding proposal. But this is the as I said, getting out of the chute. The initial sales and bonds is in the first biennium. And over 30 years, the total debt service payments relative to the projects being delivered would be approximately $2.6 billion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Gray, as long as we have a small pause here, I just wanted to comment that we do have people in the audience, I think, that won't be here after this, and I don't know if they're going to testify, but if you could adjust yours, because I presume you will be back, and I didn't tell the members of the committee, will. This will not complete the total budget review today, so they'll be coming back. And perhaps if you have a good stopping point somewhere, unless we want to stay this evening, we have some people that may want to testify, or may, in your opinion, if you want to bring them up, fine, because there may be some questions at some point.
Mr. Chair, that'd be great. Why don't I get through this? And I think I'd like to segue to the plan was to talk about one of the programs, State Roads, our operations and maintenance. We'll go right into that. So real quickly, there are some other issues of monies coming in, including MBEST on leased vehicles and the flex fund transfer, which is basically part of the 5% flex fund monies that are from the highway user formula. But the big ticket items in terms of things that decrease the fund balance are the debt service, of course, the salary adjustment that the governor has proposed for all agencies. And the only point that I really want to make on this news slide is the increased public safety spending. Just for a committee awareness and reminder, State Patrol is funded out of the Trunk Highway Fund, and the $19 million represent new initiatives to add patrol complement and there's a base adjustment essentially going forward for the State Patrol. So that's just an impact on the Trunk Highway Fund, so we just wanted to illustrate that. I think on the next slide you can see where the money's going by program. And what we're going to do is have individuals come up and talk to each of these program areas. And with that, I think I'd like to, if it's okay with the chair, at your suggestion, we'll go ahead and bring up Bob Winter, who is our division director for district operations, and we'll talk about State Roads infrastructure operations and maintenance. And if time permits, we have a couple of other program areas that we can talk to, and each presenter will indeed reference the budget book, and we're committed to going through the entire book to both profile the program and talk about some of the numbers that are part of the change adjustments in each section.
Mr. Gray, that doesn't, Mr. Winters won't be talking anything in, on your, on
you
this
to,
brochure.
Mr. Chair, if you go to your last, the last page of your handout, he'll be referencing that as well as bring us to the budget book as well, because we did talk about the $26 million transfer to operations and maintenance, and essentially that's what the last page of your handout does. It shows where that money is proposed to be going in our operations and maintenance budget area.
Actually, if I could for just a moment, Representative Hortman has to leave, and we had in the last committee, we had a bill referred from the floor, which we actually sent back as we normally do to finance, and now they tell us that one can go directly to the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee and represent. All we need is a motion from Representative Hortman to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 122 be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety.
The committees understand we send it back to finance like we usually do, and now they say we can send this one to public safety direct. So that's what this motion does. Is there any corrections or questions?
Oh.
Well, Senator Beard.
Remind me again of what the bill was about.
Representative Hortman, do you want to comment? That was a child restraint. Was that what you call it? Yeah. So that goes directly to public safety rather than...
So we have to bubble wrap our kids and we get them out of bed in the morning. Okay.
That would be helpful, Representative Beard.
So if there's any further questions or comment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Motion passed. No, Mr. Gray, Mr. Winters, would you identify yourself as far as your title, too?
Certainly I will. Good afternoon, Chairman, Leader, and members of the committee. My name is Bob Winter, and I'm the director of MnDOT's District Operations Division, so I have the privilege to work with the 8 districts around the state of Minnesota, and as was mentioned, a number of the district engineers are with us today and would be happy to respond to any questions that you might have of them. As you know, the districts are responsible for planning, design, construction, operation, and maintenance of the state trunk highway system. And so today I will be presenting a little more detail on the biennial budget proposal for infrastructure operations and maintenance in the state road construction program. Just to clarify, and there's always a little confusion about this, this is not to be confused with the capital program, which is where we do a lot of new construction. You'll be getting some more information on the state road construction. This is the operations and maintenance, the day-to-day operations and maintenance activities that go on out on the system, and operations and maintenance is one of the first activities in MnDOT's strategic plan, which was discussed, I think, when we gave our department overview several weeks ago. Talked about some of those areas. This budget activity for operations and maintenance is covered in your budget book starting on page 39. Infrastructure operations and maintenance budget provides the people, the equipment, the materials needed to operate and maintain and evaluate the 29,100 lane miles of state trunk highway, 4,767 bridges, and the many, many roadside features such as signs, signals, stripes, guardrails, and many miscellaneous other items. Infrastructure operations and maintenance is broken down into 7 product lines, again, that are outlined in the budget book that you have. First is smooth roads, which includes all the activities that relate to providing the best ride possible for the highway user. Second one is clear roads, which provides for clearing roads of snow and ice and other debris. Those two activities are consistently, we consistently hear from the public that those are should receive our top priority service, and I can assure you that they do. Next is traffic management, which includes all the features to keep traffic moving in a safe and efficient manner. Roadside activity provides the mowing, the noxious weed control, rest area maintenance, litter pickup. Now, through market research, we know that the public considers some of these activities to be of less importance. Bridge provides the annual bridge inspection, emergency and routine bridge repairs, and the bridge preventive maintenance activities. Regulations, issues permits, controls the work for contractors within the right-of-way, and identifies safe routes for wide and overweight vehicles. And finally, fleet and facilities acquires and maintains the equipment and the buildings needed to support all the other maintenance activities. As you may recall, in the earlier hearing on the department overview, we introduced the department snapshot document, which is a lot of information, a lot of data about our performance measures. You have that. You were provided that document early. In addition to these formal performance measures, we periodically conduct statistically valid surveys to determine the public satisfaction with all of our roadway services.
Mr. Winter, excuse me. Representative Hortman had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering on the roadside, you mentioned the mowing, that you had some market research that the public wasn't all that crazy about that, those particular expenditures. Do you know how much money we could save if we quit the mowing?
Representative Harbin, not right off the top of my head. We still do some mowing. It's considerably reduced from what it was a number of years ago, but we still do mowing. It's not only for aesthetic purposes. It has many practical applications, and it's not that we don't hear from the public about their wish to see some nice roadsides. It's just not the top priority with the public. But we can determine kind of what an average annual expenditure is in mowing. Not to suggest that we could completely do away with mowing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up. I would imagine there's some places where it's a safety issue and you can't see unless there's some mowing that's done. But I'm hoping we can maybe find some savings there.
Thank you for that comment, and we'll look further into that area. It's an area that we have been reducing over time.
Representative Morrow, I had a question, Mr. Winter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Winters, I have a question about buildings, specifically the VNDOT building in Mankato, and concern about developing and, in essence, reconstructing that building. Could you comment on that under this budget area?
That the Mankato building was not in the governor's budget proposal. It has been discussed, I guess, at several earlier sessions. As I understand, there has been some bills that are at least in the development stage, if not introduced, to maybe suggest that that building should be looked at again this session. But it is not part of the governor's budget proposal.
If I may follow, does that building need to be done?
Mr. Winters?
There's Representative Leader and members of the committee. I guess over the years, yes, there's lots of the building is getting overcrowded. I think there's issues with the equipment storage areas, and many areas that other factors are. Parts of that building request that would indicate that at some point we're going to have to replace that building.
Mr. Winters, I think that's been in the budget proposal for about 15 years, as I recall.
Mr. Chair, that's not too far from the truth. It has been supported at least on two occasions by the governor. However, in this session, for this budget, he's only got emergency building expenditures in the budget, and in fact is supporting our capital budget for repair of the facade of the building, of the central office building across the street, where there's a significant safety security issue that has been identified. So that is in the building budget, but there are no buildings from MnDOT, or nor do I believe other agencies in his budget recommendations for this biennium, only emergency capital expenditures, of which coincidentally our CO building applies right now. But the governor has been very much a supporter of the Mankato headquarters project in previous capital budget bills.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Winter, I just have a quick follow-up on Representative Hortman's question about mowing and grasses along the right of way. I remember tracking a bill a few years ago that proposed to actually ban the use of native grass seed on right of ways, and it turned out that the fiscal note showed that we would save money by doing so. I think it's like $50,000, something similar to Glenn Nelson. But I'm just wondering, as we're looking to speed up the use of cellulosic ethanol if there may be some win-win opportunities here to reduce our mowing costs and right-of-way maintenance, but also even sell the product when it does get mowed a couple times a year. And, I mean, we may actually, I mean, I hear Representative Morgan laughing a little bit, rightly so, but at the same time, I mean, there are other states, and I don't remember if I've seen in Minnesota, where we actually see round bales of the mowed grass, the mowed hay, and can easily be picked up and taken, you know, to a cellulose ethanol plant. Just want to throw it out there as we're looking at the right-of-way issue.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Winters, I presume you want to comment, but Representative Kalin, they do allow people to do the mowing, and that relieves the department to do some mowing to pick up the hay, too. But Mr. Winters?
Representative Leader and Representative Kalin, I really don't have too much more to add, but that is a suggestion, and certainly with the increased emphasis right now on ethanol production in Minnesota and using other biomass materials, that's certainly an area that probably bears some further consideration in the future. So we're certainly open to it. I mean, it creates lots of questions about harvesting on the right-of-way and related to safety and those kinds of things, but I'm sure, you know, there's could be some opportunities that we could do something in that area.
Perhaps, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Winter, it's another revenue source that might displace Representative Earhart's tax increase by 0.000001%.
Representative Nelson had a question.
Well, just, Mr. Chair, the bill that I think he was referencing was 4 years ago, was to eliminate the use of native wild grass, and if I remember right, when MnDOT came out and testified, it actually saved money by using native and wild grass. It cost more on the front end for the seed, but over the length of time, because they didn't have as much problem with noxious weeds and all the other stuff, that it cost less in maintenance, and it was actually a cost savings using it. But I also had the same thought and whispered to Representative Portman before she left about planting switchgrass there. But I do as I travel in the rural country, see them with the round bales, that there are farmers that are out there harvesting that, and I think it's a good idea.
Mr. Winters, I suppose we could get in long discourse in that, but the height of the grass affects deer in our country, and they sleep in there, and they come right out when a car comes by, so you may proceed, Mr. Winters.
It's interesting that you should comment, although the public feedback is that there's not a lot of interest in roadside and the maintenance of roadside. It sure does generate a lot of discussion whenever you bring it up, because as with many things, a lot of people have an opinion about what they like to see and what they don't like to see, and if they're interested in pheasants or deer or harvesting sedge grass for ethanol. So it does generate always generates a lot of discussion when you launch off into that area. Continuing on, just a little bit more about performance. I was talking about performance measures and public feedback. Those are two items that are very important to us as we prioritize our work and target our available maintenance and operations funds. Smooth pavements, as I said earlier, are very important to Minnesota motorists, and we're working towards providing smooth pavements on a couple of fronts. As I mentioned, on the capital front, where we actually are capped through our capital program, where we make those investments to upgrade and improve, and in some cases construct new roadways, and on the operations and maintenance side, which is really what we're focusing on today, where we do all those day-to-day pavement repairs on our pavements that are in maybe poorer condition, and do the preventive maintenance on the good pavements that is very useful to protect that investment and to extend the pavement life. Recognizing the need to the increased emphasis on areas that are a priority to the public, the governor's proposal adds $21.5 million for the biennium to the smooth roads, bridge preventive maintenance, and traffic safety areas, as is pointed out on the slide. In the smooth road categories, additional funding will help to meet the motorist's desire with additional funds for pavement patching, repairs, and the maintenance and repair of the many drainage structures that are out along the system. Minnesota's bridges are in generally good condition, but they do continue to age. And so investing additional funds in bridge preventive maintenance activities such as crack sealing, joint repair, and deck flushing will effectively extend the life and serviceability of bridges. Minnesota has very safe roadways. Through the efforts of many safety-focused organizations, the roadway fatality rate in 2006 was the lowest it's been since 1945, and we're very collectively all very proud of that. Some of the additional funds will be used to repair and maintain those various roadside safety features that will help Minnesota reach its goal of towards zero death. One of those, well, one example is the cable median barrier that you've maybe been hearing more and more about recently. That is a safety device that very effectively prevents cross-median crashes. Those crashes often result in very serious injury or fatalities. Very effective, the cable barrier, when hit, needs to be repaired, and some of this money would be directed to that activity. I'm very happy to report that our snow and ice performance indicators are on target and will continue to receive our priority consideration in our work planning and resource allocation. Are there any questions?
Mr. Winters, I'm afraid to open that one up, because there are questions, and I'd just like to relate to some of them that I've been getting before the members, not before they get in, but when we could address them. The big subject of outsourcing, my understanding, what areas are you outsourcing? You're outsourcing striping, you're outsourcing sweeping. I don't know how much you're doing with snow plowing as far as part-time help, but that seems to be a real problem in the maintenance areas. And the real problem, as I see it, is looking at it, not only when you outsource, you right away sell the excess equipment, so you really can't come back into it. Would you want to comment on that?
Representative Leader, in the maintenance activity, we really currently are not doing a lot of outsourcing. There are some activities. You mentioned, snow plowing. I think there's almost no outsourcing of snow plowing. We do have some agreements with some local units of government where it makes sense for them to plow some of our roads that more directly service the local kinds of trips. So really not a factor in snow and ice. Striping, we do striping in a number of different ways. MnDOT has its own kind of centralized striping business. So we still continue at MnDOT to do the striping on the routine striping. In most instances, striping on new construction, for example, is always included in the construction contract. So I suppose you could interpret that as being outsourcing of some striping.
And you, excuse me, how many striping units? You used to have one in each district. Now I think you only have several. Is that correct?
Well, we've consolidated our stripers into what we call the striping business. So we've kind of centralized them all, and those stripers travel around the state, utilize crews from the districts, and do striping in those districts on kind of a schedule, rather than having our striping equipment kind of dispersed all across the state, where in maybe each district or shared by a couple of districts. We think that the centralized striping business has been a very cost-effective approach to doing the striping, the routine striping that's necessary, improvements that are necessary.
Mr. Winters, are you usually able to keep up statewide without having one area that didn't get striped because of the season, or what?
I guess I'm not a representative. I'm not aware that there's has been a huge backlog. Of course, striping is kind of weather dependent. You know, you can't do it too early in the season, too late in the season. If you get long stretches of wet weather, you may not be able to stripe. But by and large, I think where the business is mostly keeping up with the demand from the districts.
In the subject of even sweeping, like on bridges and cleaning, now you're outsourcing in one of the districts right now, starting out?
Much of our spring roadway sweeping is contracted out. That's correct.
Previously, that was done by your own forces, right?
It's been a kind of a mixture over time. I think we still do some sweeping with our own forces, but we also contract some out. I don't see it on our list here. So. But it's a combination of both some internal and some contracted.
is in the reduction of workforce, I think it's been, as I remember, the past couple of years, they were worried about what was the theme that the department had about customer service. And I recognize definitely one maintenance district where there used to be people in the office that you could come there, the customer would come, and there'd be someone there. Now you go and you ring a doorbell and you wait for somebody to come from two buildings behind to come up and answer the door. Those cuts, is that significant statewide in the maintenance shops? I think, I've been here a while, but I think most of those maintenance shops have been rebuilt in the last 10, 15 years, and they're pretty nice facilities, and we're getting to a point where we've got some real good shops and probably no service to that point, it appears to me. Is that correct?
Well, Representative Leader, I think our focus over the past years has been to deploy our staff, our people, where the work is, where the activities need to be. So, correct, in probably many of our truck stations and our maintenance shops, the staff is out on the road somewhere performing, what you would expect to be those expected routine maintenance activities. We're finding in the computer age that we have less need in our offices, if you will, for administrative assistance and clerical support. Timesheets are all automated nowadays. We used to have clerks essentially compiling timesheets. Those kinds of things are entirely automated now. So the work is changing such that that we find it's not necessary to have all those support staff available in all the truck stations and some of the maintenance shops.
I recognize that. I kind of wonder, though, sometimes for us in the rural area, distance is a factor. And while I know we need those consolidations and we do it, sometimes I think we've been fortunate with the winters we've had, especially. I know an area which I represent, we're really fortunate. I think if we got some of the snows that you had here lately, I think we'd be in, your phone would be ringing pretty hard because I know the staff has been cut significantly and the equipment has been cut. That's, I guess, my concern. And I'm assuming that's happening statewide because you normally don't pick on one area. I recognize that, and I recognize the situation you're in, but I just like to make certain that we're aware of that, and we'd certainly like to address it rather than just outsourcing a lot of these things.
Thank you for the comment, Representative Leader. I mentioned earlier on that we're paying a lot of attention to our performance measures, and that's really a tool that we use a lot to gauge how we deploy our resources. So we pay very close attention to how, if we're meeting the performance targets that we have, and that helps us decide if we need more people in an area, more equipment in an area. And our experience, as we gain experience with using performance measures and understanding performance measures, we're finding that helps us match our staff with the performance expectations. And many of our performance measures are based on that public feedback about what they expect and what they want to see us provide. So it's kind of an evolutionary process, I guess, that we think is helping us to be more effective and efficient.
I don't envy your position. Actually, I have to commend the department for Sunday, as far as I was concerned. Anything I came down, and it was really, I came down on Sunday, supposedly, when everything was bad down here. It was really an excellent condition as far as I could see. I had one comment from someone that got home and said in particular areas now, because a shortage of staff, they put a stop arm up so you can't drive when the snow is. They figure they're stopping people from going in there. And I can kind of recognize what's going on, but that does cause some problems, apparently, because the public thinks you're shutting off a road and there's people in between and all of that. But how much of that do you have? I think we're doing that pretty much in interstates and the exits and or the ramps.
Representative,
I understand it's also in some two lanes. Is that correct?
Well, I think it's predominantly on the interstate system, and it's really, that's a matter of public safety.
Right.
We do get winter snow and ice events that it's just not safe for our staff to be out there or for the public to be out there. So in conjunction with the State Patrol, which really makes the call on public safety, we have been installing some arms where we can actually close some sections of a roadway when the conditions are just so that we can't safely maintain that piece of roadway for the public safety, probably regardless of how many people we had out there. It's just whiteout, blizzard, things of that nature. There's nothing you can do but kind of wait out nature and then and close the road in the meantime.
I certainly recognize it, but the point has been brought up to me, and I thought I'd just mention it because there's concern. Apparently, the public isn't aware sometimes what you're trying to do to protect them. We send somebody out, and they kind of, their life is in jeopardy that somebody went out and they shouldn't have been. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along with the snow, I was just curious. We haven't had a whole lot of events, and I know we budget into for snow removal, and have we saved money this year with not plowing snow, with plowing the roads as much? I mean, we've just had one real major event, and I know we're going to have another one. I was just whispered here that they've already declared a winter storm advisory for this Wednesday or Thursday and Friday, so where are we at on our snow budget? I know in some years I've heard in the past where they've overspent it because of excessive snow.
Representative Nelson, you're exactly correct. My first comment whenever this topic comes up is this winter isn't over with yet. We've been pretty fortunate up to, last weekend we've had a milder than normal, or I don't know if milder than normal, but at least milder than the last couple of winters in the snow and ice area. So we were a little bit behind the spending curve, but you know, we'll see what happens. Last weekend was, we expended a lot of resources last weekend, and we may have another weekend blizzard coming, and March is still along. We haven't even got into March yet, so it's a little bit early to be declaring victory, but we are watching, of course, we watch that very closely, monitor our spending in snow and ice, and when the end of the season comes, if there's money left, we will be spending that money on other on the road activities that need to be done out there.
Mr. Winters, I presume though the chemicals you're still using pretty heavy in the chemicals or not? Is your ice controlling them?
Representative Leader, you're correct. We are using chemicals. We are getting around to the time of the year when we get some solar advantage. The sun's a little different place in the sky now, and temperatures tend to be a little bit milder, so chemicals are more effective. We have to use fewer chemicals to get the same result. The snow and ice event that we had early in February, when the temperatures were below zero, was much discussed, and really part of the reason for that, at temperatures below zero, 10 below zero, our chemicals, the effectiveness of our chemical salt are very much diminished, and so you have to be out there and mechanically remove snow or ice or whatever the situation might be. But we are still using chemicals, and we will continue to use chemicals as appropriate through the rest of the season. But the situation does change as the season changes a little bit with pavement temperatures and with sky temperatures and the sun. We get a lot of advantage from the sun this time of the year.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard, we're a follow-up.
And I guess this was the other question I had about rate maintenance. The 21.5 that you're putting back, I vaguely remember from 4 years ago when we did the bonding ahead for the roads that they took, or that, and maybe I'm wrong in this, but they took money, my memory is that they took money out of maintenance to help cover the cost of servicing those bonds. Is this 21.5 a realization that we need more money back there for maintenance overall? Have we shorted that part of it in the last 4 years?
Representative Leader, Representative Nelson, the 2003 bonding proposal did divert some money, operating dollars. Those dollars generally were not out of our maintenance budget. Maybe all of those dollars came out of more of the administrative, primarily some of the central office functions. But the dollars to support that particular bonding proposal were not a deduct from our maintenance activities. So this is really an additional, adding additional money to maintenance activities. In addition to last biennium, we had some discussion very much similar to this and shifted some money from state road construction into maintenance. So this has been two bienniums in a row now that the governor's budget proposal has been to direct additional dollars towards towards maintenance and operations activities.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Winters, you may not be the one to answer this, but when we rebuilt the 35E bridge over the Mississippi a few years ago, we invested in a kind of an in the road spray system there that seemed to work pretty marvelously this winter. Last couple winters, in fact, we've driven on that bridge. Has that been declared a success? Is that a test site? Is that something we're going to see more of in the future? Or am I asking the wrong guy here?
Mr. Winters?
Representative Leader, Representative Beard, no, that has been, that's some technology that we've been experimenting with for a number of years. We've tried different applications, particularly on a number of different bridges around the metropolitan area. I think each one has gotten a little better than the one before as the technology improves. Yes, I think we can declare that technique as a winner. That's one of the many technology applications that we have that we're finding helps us meet our snow and ice targets, along with the chemicals and the way our trucks are outfitted. But the bridge deck de-icing does work, particularly on things like bridge decks, which are very susceptible to icing, and it doesn't always make sense to send a truck out with chemical just to deal with a isolated bridge deck or a couple of bridge decks. So we're finding that in-deck de-icing system is very effective, and we will probably be continuing to use that on future new bridges.
Any further questions? One question, are you able to replace equipment? Have you been the equipment replacement? It wasn't add to your category, is that another person?
Well, I guess it's as much my category as anyone. Yes, we have equipment replacement budget. We are replacing equipment. One of the things we're finding, frankly, is particularly on our plow trucks, the cost of plow trucks has tremendously escalated over the last few years, essentially doubled. I think the plow truck that cost $125,000 in, I think, 2003 will cost $230,000 or $40,000 probably the next time we buy new trucks in about 2007 or 8. So equipment costs are certainly increasing, and we think at least currently we're able to keep up with our replacement cycle on equipment with the equipment budget that we have. We have a dedicated equipment budget.
Right. Representative Earhart had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, your last slide up there, what do I find in the budget book here, 21.5 and so forth? I'm looking at page 43, I guess that's where...
I think that's the right page.
I'm just trying to figure out where you get the increase, decreases, and so forth there.
You're correct, Representative Earhart. Page 43,
yep.
If you look in the very right-hand column, about 1, 2, 3, 4 numbers down, you see the 21.5.
Yep.
That's the biennial, that's the same 21.5 you see on the screen up here. That's the biennial number, which is 10.75 for each of the 2 years of the biennium increase.
And the base, Mr. Chairman, is what's in there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, the base is approximately $205 million a year, and we're proposing to increase that to almost $219 million a year. And that's a combination of reallocation, the 21.5 that you were just talking about, which is $10,750,000 a year, plus factoring in a compensation adjustment. It's a definite increase from approximately $14 million a year.
So the base is the 207, subtotal forecast base is 204.
The base for this biennium is approximately $204 million. The base at the end of the biennium, $204 million per year, will be $218.6 million per year.
I can't hear you, so after you get through there, I'll come up and ask you.
Okay.
Why did you do that after? We're just about out of time, Representative Earhart.
Just real briefly, we've heard a lot of whining from various cribs about, you know, the lack of plows. fewer plows, fewer drivers in, and in asking some questions, one of the things I was told is the technology of plowing has changed, and that in the past you'd have to run two trucks, a blade truck and a plow truck, where now you have undermount blades, etc. Can you talk a little bit about how some of those changes have contributed to the change in number of trucks on the road?
Representative Holberg, yes, I think there has been dramatic improvements in the technology, if you will, of our snow and ice fleet. We have new trucks. They're much differently equipped. The underbody plows, is what you mentioned, is one of the features. Of course, in the chemical area, we pre-wet, which is where you spray a little bit of a salt solution on the salt before it comes out. That speeds up the action of the salt, so the trucks are equipped with pre-wetting equipment. We have much improved spreaders and the controls on the spreaders, so we can better control the output of salt. I mean, it started out many years ago with a couple of maintenance workers in the back of a truck with a shovel scooping sand salt over the tailgate, evolved into kind of just a dump out of the back, evolved into some spreaders, and evolved into now some very very highly calibrated spreaders that there are next generation spreaders that are connected by satellite through GPS, so and the road sensors, so the spreader knows exactly what the road conditions are and can, as is going on in farming, I think, right now, if the Lieutenant Governor here, she could comment on that, but can adjust the rates as we go. So the technology is improving. The kinds of chemicals that we have are improving. We're getting much smarter about using chemicals. Some time ago, it was kind of the more was better, and we'd hear reports of kind of drifts of chemical alongside the road, which was not doing anybody any good. So we can very much tune our chemical application now to the conditions, weather condition monitoring, road weather information systems we have deployed around the state, so we can watch as snow and ice events move across the state, monitoring pavement temperature, both with the road weather information system, the monitors mounted in the truck. So there are many, many technological advancements in our trucks that are making them much more effective.
Thank you, Mr. Winters. I believe, unless Mr. Gray will be back, someone will be back. Unless there's any other questions, we've got a couple of announcements. Be sure you put your packets back in your book, because we'll be using them next committee meeting. And also, Representative Horns, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Unless there's some questions from, did you have anyone else, Mr. Gray, that you wanted quickly to say something or anything?
Mr. Chair, we've got people to testify. It's just a matter of your call and what agenda, but we're ready to start Thursday, and we'll go right from the top of the budget book and right through each of the programs, and I think we can get through most of it on Thursday.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank the audience for some. I recognize a few faces, appreciate they're here. Representative Hornstein had a...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I know that the MnDOT Brain Trust is probably meeting as we speak to plan out their response to the storm that we've heard is coming, and I know they'll do a great job, but in the event that this gets really bad tomorrow, we do have a subcommittee hearing in the evening in Minnetonka, and we'll be monitoring the computer modeling and the radar. I'm always interested in being a weather person, consulting with all of the appropriate climatological data, and if we do have to cancel, we'll try to make a decision right after our subcommittee meeting, and so watch your email or contact Abby, and we certainly don't want to have people out and about if the conditions are such that we should be staying put. So monitor that. There is that foot of snow they're predicting, so
thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And we'll be meeting in the basement next time rather than this room, too. So, yeah. Thank you. The meeting's adjourned.